Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about three movies: The Muppet Movie, The Great Muppet Caper, and The Muppets Take Manhattan. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
I ain't missing you at all. Missing you. Since you've been gone. Away.
What is that, a John Waits or something, right?
Hell yeah, we've been gone for 3 weeks, buddy.
We have, yes, it's been a while, so it's good to have you back on the show, sir.
Get your hand off my leg.
That is a ridiculously long arm I must have, considering I'm recording this in California and you're currently in Florida. But in any case, yes, it is good to be back. Hopefully everybody had a good Easter break, and it's Mother's Day right now as we're recording this, so happy Mother's Day to any current or future mothers out there. If you guys are just joining us for the very first
Weird.
Time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, in this case it'll be reviews of the week, and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. You guys can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, it has been a while, but it is my turn for the character name game this week. Are you ready for this action?
We still play this game?
We do still play this game, yes.
Hit me.
All right, here we go. The character for this week is Diego de la Vega.
Boom, I know this.
Awesome. I figured this is a kind of an easy one, so we'll get back to it at the very end of the episode. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and move into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of special events we've attended, or anything along those lines. So, Tyler, as always, let's start with you. What have you been consuming recently?
Well, this week I checked out The Golden Compass, starring James Bond and the lady from Batman Forever, also known as Nicole Kidman, right, and Daniel Craig. It also featured Sam Elliott, the voice of Ian McKellen. Those were all the people that really stuck out to me, I guess. Have you ever seen this film?
I have not. I remember when it came out, it was supposed to be this kind of big fantasy franchise, you know, the start of a franchise that was supposed to rival Harry Potter and all this stuff, and then the movie actually didn't do very well in theaters, and they scrapped plans for any sequels. But what did you think about it?
It was really confusing storyline-wise. The characters were pretty awesome, especially Sam Elliott's character. And kind of the overarching story was pretty interesting. But since, like you said, it was the beginning of a franchise, like the first movie, or the Golden Compass, or what was supposed to be the first movie, actually leaves a lot of questions, like majority of the questions that the movie talks about unanswered, because they thought they were going to have like two or three or four more movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it tells a fairly vague story about this girl who like has to rescue children. It's kind of a confusing, convoluted fantasy tale. I'm not going to get into it. But the first part of it, I was really interested. Like, the visually stunning. It was kind of like a Final Fantasy game, almost. There was a lot of cool stuff going on. I was keeping up with what they were trying to build. Like, they were trying to build the framework of what the, you know, what their world is like, and that there's this possibility of other worlds, and that Daniel Craig's character is going to go and try to discover these other worlds.
Mm-hmm.
But then it just drops off, like, 15 minutes in. It just, all of a sudden, it's like these kids, and she's trekking across the world, and you're like, what the heck's going on? Why aren't we going to where the multiple worlds are? And they don't really start going towards that until the very end of the, spoiler alert, till the very end of the movie. So, by the end of the movie, you're just like, like, you know, there's not another Golden Compass 2 or anything coming out anytime soon, so you're just like, all right, I guess that's it. So it's kind of disappointing. I do have the book, the trilogy of books, and they're like, I don't know, it's like 1,000 pages or something. So I could read it, but really, who reads?
Right. I remember there being some sort of hubbub around the release of this movie because there's supposedly like anti-Christian themes or something running through it. Did you pick up on
that? Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because, yeah, a lot of people were saying the guy that wrote the book was an atheist, and I don't know whether he is or not, and that the story itself was about these kids trying to kill God.
Okay.
And you watch the movie, and there's nothing like that at all in the movie. So
really?
Obviously, there was just some type of propaganda, like you said, trying to keep people from going and seeing this movie. There is this religious organization, like kind of like the Vatican, I guess, would be the, you know, a good
like the real world equivalent.
Yeah, kind of like a counterpart to it. And it tries to kind of basically control society by telling lies. But it's the organization. It's not a deity of any kind. It's just an organization of people who hide behind a veil of religion or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I don't even think the idea of God is even mentioned in the movie. So I don't know what kind of evidence these people had. Maybe there's something in the books that I haven't read.
Okay.
But yeah, I didn't see any sign of that at all.
Have you seen the Chronicles of Narnia films?
I have seen the first and second one.
Okay.
I really liked the first one. Didn't really like the second one because there were a lot of battle scenes and not enough. I don't know. It wasn't as story-driven, I guess, as the first one.
Okay.
But I have to go and read those, too. I have that as well.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it was something similar as far as, like, the religious allegories or whatever something in that series. Because I feel like it's pretty... I feel like the Chronicles of Narnia series is pretty on the nose as far as what they're doing. You know, like, it's pretty obvious to see what kind of correlations they're trying to draw. I just didn't know if it was maybe a little bit more muddled in the Golden Compass.
No, a lot of what the Golden Compass is like, you could tell it's kind of just made up to look like it's fantasy. I didn't really see any roots in, you know, Judeo-Christian mythology or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there were talking polar bears, which was really awesome. I love polar bears.
Okay.
Which is kind of disconcerting because if, like, each person in this world has, like, an animal companion, which is part of their soul.
Mm-hmm.
And if my animal, I would want it to be one of the polar bears, but the polar bears don't have those, so it wouldn't really work out.
Okay.
I don't know. You'd have to see the movie to know what I'm talking about.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Anything else you've been consuming?
Also watched Haunted Honeymoon with Gene Wilder, Gilda Radner, and Dom DeLuise last
night.
Wow. Yeah, it was pretty entertaining. It's another one of those films that you're like, is this a Mel Brooks film? But it's really not.
Okay.
So you kind of go in, you think it's going to be fairly humorous like Mel Brooks, but it wasn't, you know, goofy and as parody as a Mel Brooks film was, but it was still pretty funny because Gene Wilder and Gilda Radner, who were actually married in real life, play two radio actors, and he's got this weird tic about him where he gets scared of lightning and stuff. And so what they try to do is they try to, like, scare him out of his wits, like, basically cure him of his fear by just forcing fear onto him.
Oh, okay.
And so they go to this his whole family's house, which is this big castle, and, you know, there's the butler and the crazy lady and the, you know, Dom DeLuise plays his great aunt or something. He plays a lady in this, and it's pretty funny, like, if you go back and watch it. And Gilda Radner's in it, which is sad because I think she died in, like, the late 80s of ovarian cancer.
Okay.
And she was married to Gene Wilder. And Gene Wilder, I think, wrote this and directed it.
Wow.
Or helped write it and directed it.
Okay.
It's on Instant Watch, so, you know, if you're looking for a 1940s-themed laugh.
Is it kind of a more like slapstick humor, or is it like more like the lines of Mel Brooks, which is a little bit more, I don't know, maybe wordplay centric?
Yeah, it was more wordplay.
Okay.
It wasn't like Three Stooges where like pies are being thrown and stuff.
Right, okay.
And then just to let you know, I'm watching Almighty Thor, which is a sci-fi series.
I think. Okay.
I didn't go and see Thor this weekend. I haven't seen it yet. So I was like, oh, look, Almighty Thor is on tonight. So I recorded that, but I have not seen it yet.
Okay. All right.
So stay tuned.
Excellent. Anything else you've been consuming, or is that it?
I'm consuming beer right now.
Nice. Classy. Okay. Good stuff. All right.
Oh, so what are you drinking, Ben?
I'm drinking grape soda currently. So
I just wanted you to say grape soda.
I know. That's how I roll. Couple things I wanted to mention, three actually. Number one, very briefly, I just wanted to mention a concert that I went to a couple weeks ago. This was Wednesday, April 27th of 2011. And a couple friends of mine and my girlfriend came in town, and we watched, we went to see Childish Gambino in concert. And I don't know if I've mentioned Childish Gambino on this podcast or not before, but okay. All right. Yeah. So just by way of very brief, a summary, Donald Glover, who's the actor who plays Troy in Community, has a hip hop persona, where he calls himself Childish Gambino, and he actually got this name from a Wu-Tang Clan name generator online back, 5 years ago or something like that. So he's actually put out like a lot of legitimate hip-hop music. This is not joke rap or anything along those lines. He goes very far out of his way to point out that this is not like a Lonely Island scenario or something where he's just making, you know, stupid songs that people can sing when they're drunk in bars, like I'm on a boat or whatever. You know, this is not that. This is him like legitimately trying and making music that actually means something to him and all this kind of stuff. So he's currently on tour. I believe this is his first kind of nationwide full length tour like this, and it's called the I Am Donald Tour. And the first about, I don't know, 20 minutes or so of the show is him doing kind of stand up comedy, like free form, just talking about whatever, and then it goes into, 45 minutes, an hour, or something like that, of music afterwards. And, I mean, obviously it was cool because I'm in Los Angeles, and seeing the show here afforded me the kind of cool opportunity to see it with a lot of the cast of Community that showed up, and, they were kind of up in the balcony above all of the normal folks, above all of us, and kind of, you know, there to show their support for their fellow cast member and all that. And Danny Pudi, who's the guy who plays Abed, Yvette Nicole Brown, who plays Shirley, and I'm trying to remember who else was there. A couple other people.
Chevy Chase.
No, Chevy Chase was not there. He's probably...
Oh, come on. All the C players.
Right, yeah. They were there.
McHale and Chase.
Just kind of... I guess Joel McHale and Chevy Chase were probably a little bit too cool to show up for this, but... anyway, I just wanted to mention that the show was really awesome, and if you guys are even remotely into hip-hop music or rap or anything like that, Donald Glover is definitely worth checking out. He's got a music video out right now for his single. It's called Freaks and Geeks, and the video is just
like a show.
Yeah, exactly. The video is a one continuous shot thing, and it was directed by a guy named Dan Ekman, who also directs a lot of the, or almost all of the, Derek Comedy internet videos. If you guys, listeners, may be familiar with Derek Comedy, that was the kind of a sketch comedy group that Donald Glover was a part of and still is a part of before he kind of, you know, hit the big time as a writer on 30 Rock and stuff like that. So anyway, yeah, I just wanted to mention that the show was fantastic and a lot of fun, good stuff. So the two other things I wanted to mention, one is I rewatched The Social Network. This is only the second time I'd ever seen it. I saw it in theaters, and then very recently I borrowed Mazer from Geek Tyrant. I borrowed his Blu-ray copy of it and was checking out the movie, which, by the way, holds up phenomenally. It's very, very – I mean, this is an awesome movie, and I'm really disappointed that it didn't win Best Picture over The King's Speech this year. Tyler, what are your thoughts on The Social Network? Have we talked about this?
I don't recall. I've seen it.
Okay. You don't remember.
Does that help in discussion? I don't remember us discussing it.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay. Well, what are your thoughts of it right now?
There was a lot of quick talking, mm-hmm. a lot of backstabbing, a lot of douchey hipsters doing stuff, and some computer lingo and algorithms written on Windows.
Yep. That's
it. And then he gets screwed over, and we all are now, you know, funding his children's 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 education.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't necessarily looking for a summary of the movie. I just mean your thoughts on it.
Like, it was good.
Oh, you liked it? Okay.
Yeah, because
I remember there being a little bit of a kerfuffle, if you will, when our good friend Joe Leninger wrote a review of it for notjustnewmovies.com.
Yeah, I remember that.
Conflicted with mine. So he was not a fan.
March movie madness.
Yes, he was not a fan of the film, and I definitely am. Aaron Sorkin wrote this script. I'm saying this as if listeners have never seen the movie before. So, I mean, I assume everyone
maybe has seen some this. MySpace listeners out there that have never,
yeah,
never seen anything.
Exactly. So, yeah, basically, I have a lot more appreciation for the movie after seeing it a second time. Aaron Sorkin's script is fantastic, and David Fincher, like, that guy can freaking direct the hell out of a movie, man. He knows what he's doing. I got a chance to watch the bonus features, which obviously I haven't had access to up until this point, but the bonus features for this movie, the one kind of making of segment, like the traditional kind of making of thing, is an hour and like 37 minutes long or something, which is longer than some normal films, probably longer than a couple that we're going to talk about later today. And the thing about it is, I was talking with Mazur about this, there's no unnecessary stuff in there. You know, it's all relevant and it's all, and there's no filler basically. So I would highly, highly, highly recommend going in and either renting The Social Network, buying it, whatever. Do what you have to do to watch the bonus features. It's a long process of sitting there and watching all of it, but it's super interesting. And the thing that the main reason that I'm really glad that I got a chance to watch it is because I now have a really tremendous amount of respect for Josh Pence, who's an actor who was the body double for Armie Hammer, who was the guy who played one of the or both of the Winklevoss twins in the movie. So these are the guys that, in theory, allegedly, Mark Zuckerberg stole the idea of Facebook from these guys. And it shows this behind-the-scenes documentary thing shows how Josh Pence and Armie Hammer, the actors, were standing there and they would learn the lines for the other one, and they would all, you know, just kind of alternate, and there was all this digital remapping and face technology and stuff where they kind of would take Armie Hammer's face and put it onto Josh Pence's body. And it's like, it just, you know, it's one of those things where when I heard that this is the way that they did it, that they kind of pulled off that dual role thing, I was like, man, that's got to really suck to be Josh Pence, you know, the guy who puts all this work in and works just as hard as everybody else, and arguably harder considering he has to learn two sets of lines. And his face doesn't even get shown in that particular performance. So he does have like one tiny cameo in the movie as like another guy where he says like one word or something. But for all intents and purposes, he's not really seen. He doesn't get any of the glory that Armie Hammer got. And Armie Hammer has been, you know, kind of turning this fame from The Social Network into a bunch of different roles. He's been in talks to join this new Snow White movie that's coming out. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff that he's been kind of, his name has been tossed around for because of the prominence that he's gotten from The Social Network. And I feel bad for Josh Pence because the guy, you know, looks like he was legitimately, you know, thankful to be a part of this process and really like wanted to work with the best people out there and all this kind of stuff. So I'm just hoping that eventually he kind of gets a little bit more recognition and stuff, because seeing the bonus features and actually seeing him put all this work into that particular role, it just gave me a lot more respect for him. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there
Hey Josh.
Kudos to Josh Pence. Yes, exactly. The last thing that I wanted to mention is Season 2 of Justified just wrapped
up. Oh, yeah, there we go.
Have you been watching the show?
Hell yes.
Okay. What
best part of this season? The redhead from the mining company. Why wasn't she in every episode? Changing clothes with Raylan Givens.
Yes, I'm kind of right there with you. She was, yes.
Hey, don't be macking on my woman.
Right. What did you think about season two of Justified?
Oh, it rocked, man.
Yeah? Did you like it better?
Literally and figuratively.
Better than the first season or no?
Yes. Better than the first season.
Yeah.
Because Mags Bennett was freaking insane, and all her retarded hillbilly children were all insane. And like that whole county is so messed up, and
yeah,
it's just really awesome. Because yeah, Raylan he's so abused and so underutilized, and then his freaking ex-wife messes all these things up, and I'm like, dude, Raylan, come on, man.
It's Justified, just for those of you who don't know, is a show on FX. We've talked about it before.
Ad nauseum.
Right, and it stars Timothy Olyphant as Raylan Givens, a U.S. Marshal. Season 2, as Tyler and I both said, is, I think, better than the first season. It's
Although season 1's really good, too.
It is, and that just kind of speaks to the exceptional quality of the second season. And I think... I don't know. Let's throw up like a little bit of a spoiler alert, just so we can talk to some of the
spoiler alert,
the specific aspects of this season finale in particular. So, if you have not seen the entirety of season 2 of Justified, please skip ahead a few minutes.
Shut off your Zune
and go back and watch that show, because it's definitely absolutely worth your time. I think it's probably one of the best serialized television shows of the past few years. So,
Colin, shows serialized.
But it's not like that's a term that's going to go out of style anytime soon.
I haven't heard the word serialized since like 1939.
All that means is that you have to see every episode to know what's going on. It's a continuous storyline, basically. So,
next week on the Phantom Space Invaders.
All right. So one of the things that I wanted to mention was like, obviously, and again, this is the last warning, spoilers.
Spoiler. Turn off your Zooms and your...
The Mags Bennett... Mags Bennett poisons herself in the finale, and did you see that coming, Tyler? What was your reaction
to
that?
I thought she was going to try to poison Raylan,
mm-hmm.
and then I was like, wait, maybe she's going to poison both of them,
mm-hmm.
and then I thought maybe Raylan was going to, like, you know, do a little Princess Bride switch of the cups or something,
mm-hmm.
But then it turns out she grabbed one from the cabinet and one from the top, so I was like, oh, this may be where she keeps her poison glasses at.
Yep.
But yeah, I saw it coming in that scene because, you know, I think the first episode was when she did that to the guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I saw that coming. Every time she brought that stuff out, I thought she was going to do it to somebody.
Right, yeah. Which is why, like, that show is so great. There's such, like, a sense of menace surrounding that entire family. And Mags, you know, is the one who kind of is the mastermind of this entire operation. And then the reason that her children are so dangerous is because they're all so incredibly stupid that they're just like wild cards. You never know what kind of insanity they're going to get into. So,
Cooper was the worst. I'm so glad he died.
Yes, exactly.
Cooper, damn it. So stupid.
But the thing about it, and I've been talking with a bunch of people about this, cause I really love this show, and I was not expecting Mags to die in the end of this season, because Justified got picked up for a third season pretty early on in the process, about halfway through season 2, I want to say. So the writers conceivably knew that they had been picked up at that point. So I was just, like, you know, kind of banking on the fact that Mags would be around in season 3 as kind of a Boyd Crowder character the character played by actor Walton Goggins has really kind of come into his own in this season. I was expecting that kind of development for Mags in season 3, but obviously that's not going to happen now that she died. And what I really wasn't expecting was for Dickie, the character played by Jeremy Davies, to be the only member of the Bennett crew to survive and make it through. So whether or not that actor is actually going to return to that role in season 3 is yet to be determined, but
I'm sure he will. I think he might join up with Boyd.
You think? Because I feel like those characters kind of hate each other.
That's why I would make it interesting. And then you make a good point, because, you know, why kill her off? Well, that storyline is over.
Like, yeah.
Season 2 storyline's over.
Right.
And if you do a cliffhanger for season 3, which probably won't come out until February 2012,
mm-hmm.
people are going to be pissed. So you might as well end the series, just like last season's little storyline was ended with, you know, Boyd's dad.
Yep.
The Miami guy that was coming after Raylan from the very beginning.
Yep.
All that stuff kind of closed up and was finished in season 1, and then we started season 2, and now everything's kind of wrapped up for the most part, so we can at least be like, oh, I have to wait 10 months to find out this and to answer this. It's more of like, oh, I can't wait until the 10 months are over so I can see what happens to Dickie, which is just kind of a throwaway character for now.
Yeah. What did you think about, you had mentioned Winona, Raylan's ex-wife.
Yeah.
What did you think about her kind of depiction in the series? Because in the first season, Raylan was the love interest for Raylan was the character of Ava. And she kind of got together with Boyd in the second season, and Winona, who was also around in season one, kind of rose up to the top and became the kind of foremost
female sidekick.
Yeah, like object of Raylan's affection in the second season. So what did you think about that? Were you a kind of a fan of the downfall of Ava and the rise of Winona, or would you rather it gone the other way around?
Ava and Raylan weren't working out season one, so I'm glad they didn't try to force that. Although Winona's pretty stupid in her own right. We talk about Mag's kids being pretty dumb. She's pretty dumb, too. But no, I'm going to stand by the Black Peak.
Black Pike, yeah.
The Black Pike redhead.
Okay, yeah.
As the possible and permanent love interest in season three. Like Winona needs to hook up with the bald marshal.
With Art and his boss.
Yeah, yeah. And then Ava, after her breast wound heals, she can hook up with Dickie, or maybe they can just start adopting Loretta or something. I don't know. I should be a writer for the show. I'd make it a lot better.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Oh, man. Okay, cool. All right. Well, yeah, as we said, season two of Justified was fantastic, and I'm really, really looking forward to the third season. So that's all I've got for Media Consume. So let's go ahead and jump into this triple feature review of the Muppet movie, The Great Muppet Caper, and The Muppets Take Manhattan.
For anyone who has ever dreamed of fame and fortune at the end of the rainbow, this is one of the greatest success stories of all time, proving once and for all that anyone can make it, no matter how young, no matter how green.
The lovers, the dreamers, and me.
All it took was a dream.
Hollywood, you sing, you tell jokes, you can make millions of people happy.
Millions of people happy.
All right, so let's talk about the Muppet movie first. This film came out in 1979. It was directed by James Frawley. And had you seen this film before, Tyler?
I'd seen bits and pieces as a child, but I hadn't seen it in a real long time.
Okay. What did you think about the Muppet movie?
The Muppet movie had me weeping uncontrollably in the first 4 minutes.
Really?
Oh yeah. And then kind of I don't want to say it's a lot more humorous and jokey than the other two.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. And it was kind of random though. Like the stuff that was happening to them, they were just kind of like, "Oh, let's go to Hollywood." And then they just meet up with all the Muppets and then boom, like Muppet movie.
Mm-hmm.
So like the next two kind of have I don't know, tasks and things that they want to achieve and
right.
stuff going on because they're all together already.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, it was kind of, I don't know, it was enjoyable for what it was. And I like it just because I liked Muppets when I was a kid. So
yeah,
every time I see a Muppet movie in any form, I'm going to probably give it an A-.
Oh, wow.
At the lowest.
Yeah, I think I liked this one... probably the best out of all of the three that we're going to talk about today, because of.
Oh, but you're a huge fan of the caper, though.
Well, I was. We'll get to that. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, this one, like you said, the comedy in it is so much more kind of over the top, and there's a lot more kind of visual gags and stuff in there. Like at one point, they come to a fork in the road, and they're supposed to turn left, and there's like a literal fork jabbed into the middle of the street.
Steve Martin as the waiter was hilarious.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean...
I don't think I laughed harder throughout all the movies than right there.
Yeah, and he's wearing those ridiculous shorts and stuff, too. like that's what this series is kind of famous for, is like interacting with, you know, Kermit and Miss Piggy and Fonzie and Gonzo and all these characters, but also them interacting with, you know, super famous celebrities at the time. So,
Mel Brooks and Adeline Kahn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dom DeLuise was somewhere in there.
Yeah, Dom DeLuise was in the very beginning. He's the one that kind of kickstarts Kermit out of...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
out of his, like, Florida swamp home and gives him the idea to come to Hollywood and you know, be a star, get rich and famous, as they say. the biggest surprise, and since we're already talking about cameos, actually a couple other ones that I had written down were Elliot Gould was the announcer,
oh, yeah,
the beauty contest winner when Miss Piggy won that contest. And
yeah, I think he was in another one too.
Mm-hmm. And Richard Pryor was the balloon salesman who kind of swindles Gonzo into buying multiple balloons, which gives him this kind of first taste of space when he's flying around in the sky and stuff, which is like a theme that is really kind of hammered into Gonzo's character over and over again. But my favorite cameo, as great as the Steve Martin one as the waiter was, was Orson Welles at the very end of the movie, because I was totally not expecting that. Like, I had seen this movie when I was a kid, but didn't really remember it. Definitely not to the level of being able to identify who these, like, famous actors and stuff were back in the late 70s, you know? So
right.
I had no idea, obviously, who Orson Welles was back then, but that was pretty amazing to see him. The kind of dramatic reveal of the... what's the character's name? It was, like, Lou Lord, I think.
Yeah.
Very end that they,
and then... His secretary was, I can't remember her name, but she was the crazy lady in Young Frankenstein.
Oh, really?
Fraulein Brücker.
Oh, okay, nice.
Can't think of her name. So there were three people from Young Frankenstein: Madeline Kahn, Mel Brooks. Oh, Mel Brooks wasn't in that, was he?
Yeah, he was the doctor in this one, in the
Muppet. Yeah, but I don't think he was in Young Frankenstein. And then, of course, Madame Brücker.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't think Mel Brooks was... Wait...
He might. He must have been in somewhere, some sort of little. I don't remember. It's sad.
I think he was.
It's sad that both of us don't know Young Frankenstein well enough off the top.
Oh,
of
no, I know it well enough. That's why I'm saying I don't think he was. I'm going through. Like, I'm trying to go through. I'm sorry. I'm trying to go through every scene, find him. But he probably makes a small cameo somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe a person. Anyway.
Yeah. So. The script for this movie was really cool, I thought, because, you know, we joke a lot on this podcast about the word meta, and, like, we've even gone so far as to create a game show called Is That Meta that listeners can go back and listen to in some of our previous episodes.
I've got poor reviews of that game.
that's why it's been on the back
burner
for a while. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even, like, in 1979, this kind of idea of a movie within a movie and things of that sort were on, like, really, really prominent display here, because even, like, the joke of the Muppet movie being a film within a film is not even as kind of important as in the movie itself, characters, like, when Kermit and Fozzie run into... what are they called?
Electric Mayhem?
Yes, the Electric Mayhem. Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. They give them a copy of the script to kind of catch them up so they don't have to, you know, re-explain to the audience what has gotten them to that point. And then they leave them with this copy of the script, and later on in the film, when it looks like they're kind of down and out and there's no way they're going to be able to make it to Hollywood in time for this audition, which is like the entire purpose of the film, Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem are the ones that come by after Kermit and company's car is broken down, and they're the ones that kind of save them from being stranded on the road. And somebody says, like, how did you guys know where we were? And they're like, oh, we just read the script and figured out this is where we're supposed to meet up with you guys. So I just love the kind of self-awareness and that whole meta aspect of this movie. I thought that was really cool to see back in...
I don't like retro calling something meta. I think that's something that you have to... That's like a 21st century term.
I think it applies to anything regardless of time. Because
I don't think I don't think people were calling it meta back in 1979. They were just like, oh, it's a movie within a movie. How about that? And now we just slap this term on anything that does something weird like that.
I don't know.
And then we see movies being made to be meta.
I don't know. I feel like in your definition of the word, you would have to come up with the exact point at which the word meta was invented, and you could only apply it to things that came into existence after that point.
Correct.
So that's really difficult to pinpoint, obviously.
Meta.
There you go again with the misuse. All right. So
dinosaurs watching Jurassic Park.
Oh, wow. That would be awesome and definitely meta, I think.
65 million years ago.
What did you think about the music in the Muppet movie?
I love the music in all these movies because it's. I mean, you could call them musicals, but they're really not. It's really good, like jazz, big band music,
mm-hmm.
with just words. And they drive the story along. And I really, like, as a music fan, I really mm-hmm. like the original music that came out of this. I mean, yeah. I think a lot of the later movies, like the ones made after Jim Henson died, I think a lot of them were, like, trying to be cool and hip, so they used, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
relatively current music and stuff like that, but you don't see, you know, these were like original compositions and jazz and big band and stuff like that. I don't know if they're original compositions, but they were really cool.
Yeah. And we should mention that the song Rainbow Connection, which is the one that opens this film,
yeah.
was actually nominated for an Oscar at the Academy Awards, which is kind of cool.
On the top five songs that make me cry, Rainbow Connection is probably number two.
Yeah, it's so just full of hope, you know? It's so...
I heard it as a kid, so it harkens back to when I was a child.
Nice.
Obviously, that makes me weep uncontrollably.
Right, because of the memories of your childhood. Oh, man.
Not in a depressing way.
Right, I know. It just... Yeah, sorry.
And, you know, like Kermit the Frog, man, it's like, you know, Jim Henson was kind of defined by these characters... And I don't know if he wrote the song. Somebody else might have written the song, but Jim Henson sang it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of makes you think back, and you're like, you know, Jim Henson. He was like this really nice guy that was. And it's funny because at that point in the movie, Kermit the Frog is asked, like, he goes, "Why would I go out to Hollywood? Why would I do that?" And Dom DeLuise's character is like, "Oh, you know, you can make a million people happy," and like that kind of just spurs Kermit to go out and like. Do all this stuff to go over all these hurdles just to make people happy, and like, mm-hmm. And from what I've read about Jim Henson, that's like exactly what his life was all about, like creating all these characters and doing all this stuff just to make people happy, like to make people laugh. So it all kind of gets emotional and
yes,
and very you know, very. It's not just a comedy; it's kind of like this guy's life mm-hmm. in puppetry, I guess.
An astute observation. Yes, very well done. Yeah, I totally agree.
Touchdown.
Yeah, 7 points for you. Two things that I wanted to mention. One, I think one of my favorite jokes in this movie, really quickly, just as a matter of like bullet points as far as this one goes, is the repetition, the running gag of some character saying a variation on the phrase "I'm lost," and then somebody else popping in and saying, "Maybe you should try Hare Krishna," which I thought was great. And yeah. then, like, even like Dom DeLuise says it, and then when I think Fozzie says it again when he's kind of introduced as like the you know, stand-up comedian at the El Slizo Cafe.
Right.
And then even Kermit kind of looks at the camera and he's like, "Great, it's a running gag." Like, you know, like the whole kind of self-awareness of the movie, I really appreciate it. And that line in particular struck out to me, especially because when they go to the church, the abandoned church that the Electric Mayhem is going to turn into a coffee shop, it says like Reverend Hare Krishna or some
yeah.
sort of something on the sign like that too, which I was cracking up at. The other thing that I wanted to mention was Statler and Waldorf, which they've got to be your Hell favorite yeah. characters, right?
Oh yeah. By far.
Yeah, those guys are so great. And they're such a small part of these movies, but they really, like, they kind of milk they kind of steal the show, you know, with their one-liners. In this one, the movie begins at a movie studio with the characters going into a screening room getting ready to watch the Muppet movie. And right before it starts in that capacity, Statler and Waldorf are like sitting in the back, and one of them's like, "I like the movie fine so far," and the other one's like, "It hasn't started yet." And he's like, "That's what I like about it." Oh. So, there's a lot of great little one-liners and stuff that they have that are kind of awesome, you know, highlights to this series, and I think they're like a great addition to the Muppet cast. You know, they're like the voice of critics or the kind of always cynical guys who are just
oh, yeah.
kind of cracking jokes back and forth. So
Yeah, Jim Henson did one of their voices too.
Yeah, I think Henson and Frank Oz, which, you know, they were the kind of super team-up group, the Batman and Robin of Muppets, were the ones who were kind of inhabiting Statler and Waldorf.
Did you get a chance to watch the camera test that was on the DVD?
I did see a little bit of it that you posted.
Posted it on the Solar Sentinel,
Yes, and I watched a little bit of it. It was like 10 minutes long, so I only watched about half of it, I think. But
I think they were like free-balling through the whole thing, which was really funny. It was just the camera and them and their puppets, and then somebody dressed up as Sweetums, the monster.
Right. Yeah.
In the screen test, like, they're just hanging out. I guess they're in England. I don't know where they were. They were hanging out in, like, this cow pasture, and, like, Sweetums is, like, running around, and he starts running away, and they're like, hey, Sweetums, get us a hamburger. He's like, okay, we're... and, like, he's just running farther and farther away, like, testing the sound, I guess.
Yeah.
Pretty humorous.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on into the next film, which is The Great Muppet Caper.
Stop the presses!
Jim Henson Home Entertainment presents...
There'll be Spectre Call, there'll be Fantasy...
It's the movie with something for everybody. Adventure.
We're just going to have to go down there and catch those thieves red-handed.
What color are their hands now?
Romance.
He's a frog, isn't he?
Yes.
Danger. And champagne.
Well, if you put enough sugar in this stuff, it tastes just like ginger ale.
Join those magnificent Muppets in the whodunit that does it all.
You want excitement?
Jim Henson's The Great Muppet Caper.
All right, so The Great Muppet Caper came out in 1981. This is the next movie chronologically, and this one was actually directed by Jim Henson. What did you think about The Great Muppet Caper?
Oh, Ben. Great Muppet Caper was... Let me remember what it was about. I thought it was a little less funny, a lot more musically driven, but still enjoyable. Imagine it. Why did I repeat that? I don't know. But it was a lot more self-referential because they kept referring to the fact that they were in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we're in a movie. Well, when's the movie over? When are the credits over? So they kind of took that joke home. And were they were in England in this one.
Yes.
So, you know, all the British cameos, I guess, were humorous for people who were familiar with British people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no Kate and William in it, I can tell you that much.
Right, yeah. This is one, and you alluded to this before when we were talking about the Muppet movie. This is the movie, The Great Muppet Caper, that I've seen the most out of all of the Muppet films. And I remember watching this a lot as a kid. And I also have a very skewed memory of this particular movie, because I hadn't seen this until I rewatched it for this podcast, probably in 15 years or something. Like, it had been a good while. And the
had you actually been watching a different movie?
No, I had been watching this one, but the majority of my memory of this movie was, like, if you would have sat me down and had me, like, describe the movie to you as I remembered it, I would have described in great detail the final 15 or 20 minutes of the movie, which is, like, the actual heist surrounding the fabulous baseball diamond. I would have said that was 95% of the film, because it didn't actually get to that until the last very, very end of the movie. And I was like waiting for it the entire time, this time around, just waiting for that part to kick in. And it just kept getting put off and put off and put off. And I was like, what is going on? I know I remember there being this huge kind of heist sequence going on. And that was, you know, it was the final set piece or whatever. So,
your refusal to take time seriously has been going on for like 20 plus years.
It has. Yeah, actually, I'm just very,
so now we know where it comes from.
Right. It comes from my childhood. Yeah.
I'm not going to keep track of you.
One of the more interesting aspects to me of watching it now of The Great Muppet Caper, especially watching it back to back with these other films, is that the characters don't recognize each other in this one. Some of them do, but others don't. Like, Kermit and Fozzie and Gonzo start out the film together in this hot air balloon, like you said, where they're like mentioning the credits and stuff. And then, so they clearly have some sort of relationship, and knew each other. But then when the characters move into the Happiness Hotel, when they arrive in England a little bit later on, they are kind of reintroduced to the Electric Mayhem and all these other characters that were clearly featured in the Muppet movie, but they just have no real relationship. It's like their minds were wiped or something when they came through, which is strange to me, because in between this one and the Muppets Take Manhattan, which we'll talk about in a minute, all those relationships are pre-existing. Like they all know each other again, which is really strange. So,
well, I think it's, well, the fact that they're Muppets, first of all, you shouldn't really take anything seriously. But the fact, and so their job as the Muppets are to put on like TV shows and movie and make movies and stuff as a group. And they're kind of like a Volvillian group where they, you know, they do their things all together. And this Muppet Caper was just another endeavor where they got together and acted in this movie. So sure. the movie called for them to not know each other, but like Fozzie and Kermit and Gonzo were referring to, they were actually in a movie. So their characters didn't know each other, but behind the scenes, the Muppets are as real as we say they are. They're actually in a movie.
I see.
Acting out these parts.
Yeah, and that does make a lot of sense, because there's that one scene in The Great Muppet Caper in which Kermit and Miss Piggy are kind of down by the lake, and she kind of breaks down and she like turns her back away, and she's like, they're talking to each other as if they were real people, like not acting for that split second or whatever, and then they kind of get back into the movie after.
Yeah, they get back into the acting.
You're right. You're right. Okay, so you're
mind blown, dude.
As if they're like essentially the equivalent of real people who were just actors instead of characters that transfer from movie to movie. I gotcha. Okay.
Because in the Muppet movie, they had already met, and then they made a movie about them meeting.
Well,
because the movie was a movie in the movie, remember?
Yes, yeah, I see what you're saying.
So those events weren't really happening. They were sitting watching the movie that had been made about those events. They just went on to make another movie.
Right, and it wasn't a documentary about the first time that they actually met.
It wasn't a Blair Witch Muppet project or anything.
I got you.
A Blair Muppet project, if you will.
Right, which they actually...
That's going down. I'm writing that down.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, thank you for talking me through this, because now I'm actually coming to some sort of understanding of like the.
Are you reaching henlightenment yet?
Oh man, you just wanted to say henlightenment again. So, you're talking about the music being a little bit more prominent in this one. I don't know if it's more prominent, but I think the songs are better. The Everybody and Me song that opens the movie and closes it also, I think, is fantastic. Yeah. I remember vividly that song, you know, from my childhood viewing experience, even to the point where I could like still sing along to some of the words, even though I hadn't seen the movie in like 15 years, which was kind of amazing to me.
Or the huge like hour and 15 minutes that you'd never seen before.
Right. Yeah, apparently. Allegedly never seen before.
Maybe it was on like a VHS tape that like the first hour and 15 minutes had been recorded over, so you could only start it from the last 20 minutes.
Maybe.
Because that had happened to me a couple times with those old VHS tapes, man.
Yeah, you never
had, like,
know.
Ninja Turtles and Lady and the Tramp and, like, some Disney cartoons all on one tape. And sometimes all of a sudden there'd be, a Rescue 911 right in the middle of a movie. And so you would miss that portion of the movie while a Rescue 911 would go on. Yeah. I don't know why there was a Rescue 911 on there, but that's a true story.
Okay, all right. Thank you for that. So
over here,
one of my favorite gags in this movie that was kind of like a repeated thing is Gonzo as a photographer. Like it says that Kermit and Fozzie are kind of identical twin news reporters, which is ludicrous on the face of it. And Gonzo was like just following them around with a camera, and like a consistent source of laughs for me anyway in this movie was Gonzo just randomly taking pictures of things and going ha afterwards, and people being just like blinded by the flashbulb and stuff, which is such a simple gag, but the way that Jim Henson and these guys are able to kind of pull off this believability that these little Muppets are actually interacting with real life is kind of astounding to me.
Did you see the Jim Henson cameo?
I did, yeah, where he was in the restaurant at the Bonnie Club or Dubonnie Club or whatever it was.
Nice.
Yeah, that was cool.
How did you feel about Charles Grodin?
You know, I remember him being a lot more skeezy and vicious and so much more villainous than he actually is, because he's just hamming it up the entire time. Like, he's overacting much. But I really, really liked his performance in this.
I liked when he sang during the swimming, Miss Piggy swimming scene.
Yeah, I have that written down too. And then later on, like, Miss Piggy makes some comment to him after, like, she's insulting him and saying that he can't even sing and he was overdubbed in that part or something. Like, you know, these are things that when I watched it as a kid, they went completely over my head. You know, I had no idea what that meant at the time. And even in this movie, in the beginning part when Lady Holiday is talking to Miss Piggy right after she's hired her as her secretary or receptionist, and she's talking about her brother Nicky, talking about Charles Grodin's character and kind of giving all this information about him and how he still gambles and squandered his half of the inheritance. And Miss Piggy's like, why are you telling me all this? And she's like, oh, it's plot exposition. It has to go somewhere. It's like, you know, that's another line that just went completely over my head as a kid. But I appreciate it for being as kind of blatant as they are about it. At least they know what they're doing. The writers and such I'm talking about with The Great Muppet Caper. So I appreciated this movie for what it was. I didn't like it quite as much as The Muppet Movie, just because I didn't think the comedy was quite as quick. You know, it wasn't as snappy.
But it's up there with it. It's up there with
it. It was, yeah. It definitely...
If you're going to watch them, I would watch them both. I mean, there's not one I would skip out of the two.
Sure, yeah, and I would agree with that too. And I think they're both like far and away above The Muppets Take Manhattan, but we'll get to that in a second.
See, I liked all three.
Oh, wow. All right, well, we're going to
let's get started.
We're going to have some
words
in a minute. But the one thing that I noticed that I kind of thought was kind of strange were a couple references to other movies. Again, this is something that I didn't pick up as a kid, but watching it this time, there's a scene where Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy are riding around on bikes to this musical.
I still don't know how they did that.
Yeah, that was kind of amazing, right? In the Muppet movie, you can see the wires a little bit more clearly, but in the Great Muppet they did a pretty good job of hiding all that stuff. So yeah, it really does kind of keep that kind of whimsical sense of magic alive when you can't really see how they're doing something. And you know, bending the joints at the knees to actually pedal a real bike and stuff. Like, it's pretty cool to see. But that entire sequence is like a reference to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which, I mean, do you remember that movie well enough to know the scene that they're referencing?
No.
There's
I haven't
a part
seen that in
where,
a long time.
Where Paul Newman and Robert Redford are riding around with Catherine Ross's character, and they're all just on the bikes, and I think it's playing Raindrops Are Falling on My Head, I believe was the song that was going around at the time. That was like right when that song came out, so it's very popular during, like, thanks to Butch Cassidy. But this whole scene in The Great Muppet Caper with Kermit and Miss Piggy cruising around on bikes is a reference to that. There's also one other reference that I picked up this time around, which was when Miss Piggy steals the truck from Peter Ustinov at the end of the movie, the big cement truck or whatever it was that he was driving around. She jumps on the CB radio and she's like, breaker, breaker, 1-9, whatever, and just like kind of talking in the CB lingo to
Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, exactly.
And boom!
To Smokey and the Bandit, which was kind of cool, and I'd never seen that movie when I was 11, but I had seen it since, and I thought that reference was pretty cool this time around. So,
I like the appearance of Columbo.
Yeah, and
Peter Falk.
Was he the dad in Princess Bride?
He was the grandpa.
Oh, excuse me, the grandfather, yes, in the very, very beginning. Was. Okay, cool. I knew I recognized him from somewhere, but I've never really seen Columbo. I don't think I've seen an episode of that, actually. So I did not recognize him from there. But, yeah, that was kind of cool to see. And, like, you know, he goes off on this excessive, like, tirade of what potentially happened to Kermit, where he, like, sunk all of his money into the glass slipper business and, like, lost that to something involving, like, a laundromat to a guy down the street or something. Like, just this really, really long tirade.
So you thought maybe you'd cut your losses by selling it. So who do you sell it to? You sell it to the guy that's been jonesing you for the last year.
And it's like,
that's you're almost completely wrong.
I was really surprised that they were able to do something like that in a movie like this that's ostensibly geared towards a younger crowd and have this complete non sequitur thrown in there for so long. I mean, that's like an extended period where he's talking about all this stuff that's just wildly confusing for children because it's not describing any event that actually happened in the film or any sort of backstory or anything. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, Kermit, it's just like, yeah, you're completely wrong. And he's like, all right, how about this? And then Kermit's like, dude, we're filming a movie here. Like, oh, my bad. All right. So I like the fact that not only was he wrong the first time, he was getting ready and preparing to launch into another one with an entirely different set of circumstances that he also found plausible for Kermit's scenario, which I thought was pretty great.
Yeah, that's good comedy right there.
Yeah, definitely. What did you think about John Cleese's appearance in this film?
I thought that was funny, too.
Him and his wife. I'm not sure who the actress is that plays his wife, but they're just like this super dry British couple that are talking across the table from each other. And one of my favorite lines in their exchange is, the woman keeps, the wife keeps like expressing how terrible the weather has been lately, just like repeatedly over and over again for yesterday, right, and the day before and all this stuff. And then, at one point, like, she says, am I boring you? And he says, oh no, if I was bored, I would just go buy something. And she's like, I suppose that's true. What would you buy? And he says, I don't know, like a can of jam or something like that. And she's like, oh, that sounds nice. I'll go to the store and get one with you. And he's like, oh no, that's not necessary. And he's like, no need for you to leave the house, or no need for you to come along. And she's like, well, I haven't left the house in 12 months. That was such a throwaway line, but I had me cracking up, man. I was really...
Yeah, that whole scene was kind of... It was just like, it was just a John Cleese scene, basically. It was that real dry, British humor.
And he's like, there's a pig scaling up the side of our house. Like, just
you remember that pig I mentioned at dinner? Oh, the one scaling the house? Yeah.
That's the chap.
I just recommended a restaurant to her. They're like, oh, that's more of a dinner club. Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, clearly, that's something that, like, all the dialogue between John Cleese and his wife is not something that kids would be concentrating on. They would be concentrating more on Miss Piggy, you know, climbing the side of the building and trying to kind of sneak through their conversation. But
I don't think a lot of adults nowadays would get it.
Would get what?
Just kind of the bored humor that was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Kind of that stiff humor. Like, why isn't Ben Stiller getting hit in the nuts?
Aww. Yeah. Okay, so...
What defines comedy in the 21st century.
Right. So before we move on to the next film, let's talk about the caper itself. What did you think about the way, the kind of mystery element of the movie, and like the entire plot, really, of this jewel thief and all that kind of stuff? How did you feel that kind of melded in with this kind of fantastical world of the Muppets?
Well, I had a couple... predetermined notions, I guess, what the movie was going to be about. When I saw, you know, I saw that, like, the big hotel, I thought everything would be taking place in, like, a hotel or something, like, kind of like a dinner theater murder mystery kind of thing, where there were all these Muppets and then all these people and then somebody got murdered or something. But it didn't turn out like that, and then, you know, who did the crime the whole movie, basically. It's no, yep. There's no caper usually insinuates the fact that it's a mystery. You don't know who it is until the very end, but you know.
Yeah.
For the majority of the movie. So as far as like a mystery, it didn't really succeed. But yeah, like the baseball diamond, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of an ends to a mean, I suppose.
Ends to a mean. Interesting. Okay.
Didn't really do it for me as far as like the, because it was, you know, they got into the wherever the museum fairly easily, so there wasn't a lot of, you know, Ocean's 11 stuff going on. They just, oh, we ordered a pizza.
Right, and then, like, they're...
Which may have been making fun of the caper heist film in and of itself.
I think it was, yeah, and they're talking about, like...
I appreciate it for that.
Yeah, they're talking about, how are we going to get up to the top? Oh, the roof. Oh, there's no way we're going to get up there. Dogs come around, and they all just, like, scramble up the side of the building really, really quickly, so... Yeah, I thought the one of my favorite sequences in this movie is like the checklist part when the two different groups are talking about what they need to complete the heist or whatever, and it cross cuts back and forth where Charles Grodin and his like model minions,
Charlie's Angels,
who coincidentally are named Marla, Carla, and Darla, and then later on in The Muppets Take Manhattan, there's another kind of similar sounding name joke where characters are named Jill, Phil, and Gil. So I thought that was kind of a little throwback.
I'm Gil.
But they're talking about, you know, like grappling hook and laser and all this kind of stuff. And then it cuts to Fozzie and Kermit and everybody, and they're checking off their checklist, and it's like whoopee cushion and like, you know,
I left that in the car. They don't have any of the stuff they're listing off.
Yeah, and they're like, it's on order. So it's like, I think they probably had like two items that they checked off on that entire list, and they're like, all right, let's do it, whatever, it doesn't matter. So
funny.
I think you're right. I think that entire thing was just like a little kind of brief commentary on the whole, all those tropes and kind of classical elements to capers and mysteries that we're used to seeing with these heist sequences and stuff.
I pick up on that stuff.
Yeah, totally. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to bring up with this movie. I'm looking over my notes here really quickly. Oh, yeah, the one thing actually is kind of goes what we were just talking about. That scene, you know, like you were saying, you thought a lot of the movie would take place within the Happiness Hotel. And, you know, when the Muppets interact with each other there, you know, like we said, the characters that they're playing in this movie are interacting for the first time. So Rizzo the Rat and all these other guys and like the Electric Mayhem and all them, in theory, don't have a pre-existing relationship with Kermit and Fozzie and Gonzo at this point, right? We've established this.
It's all up for grabs, pretty much.
Okay.
The movie.
Well, if that's how we choose to read it, which I think is, you know, supported by the film, at the very end of the movie, when they're prepping for this, this heist sequence and trying to stop Charles Grodin's character from stealing the baseball diamond, you know, Kermit kind of gives the speech to everybody and says, like, hey, this is what we're going to be doing. I know it's pretty dangerous. There's a chance that somebody might even die here. If you guys want to leave, now is the time to do it. And everybody backs out. And then Fozzie comes in. He's like, oh, shame on you guys, whatever. And, like, when you think about it, there's no reason for these characters to want to risk their neck for Kermit or Fozzie or Gonzo, even if Miss Piggy is in prison, because they don't know her. They haven't spent any time, even within the confines of the Great Muppet Caper, the movie, they haven't spent any time with these characters.
Didn't they all go on the date with her and Kermit?
Right, that's the only thing that they did. They checked into the hotel, and then they found out that Kermit was going on this date with what is supposed to be a Lady Holiday, and then they just gave them a ride to the date. They didn't even go inside, really. Only
the most serious discussion concerning Muppets ever had.
Well, I just mean, you know, like Fozzie acts really kind of shocked that these characters aren't willing to risk their lives for Miss Piggy.
Right.
And when you take a step back and realize what their relationship is within the confines of the film, it really doesn't surprise me that they would not want to kill themselves potentially to rescue somebody that they barely know. That's all I wanted to bring up.
Point made.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the last one. This is The Muppets Take Manhattan.
New York. Times Square. Broadway. All the lights. All the spectacle. All the excitement. Thousands come every day dreaming of one thing: to make it to the top. Out of these thousands, one has a very special dream. And he's got something unique, something ordinary people don't have. And together with his friends, he's gonna take this town by storm.
Taxi? Taxi?
The Muppets Take Manhattan. Coming soon from TriStar.
All right, so The Muppets Take Manhattan came out in 1984, and this one was directed by Frank Oz, which, you know, we talked about Jim Henson directing the last one, and Jim Henson and Frank Oz co-directed The Dark Crystal, which is another movie that we talked about on this podcast in one of our earlier episodes.
Episode 7.
Yes. And then, but this, The Muppets Take Manhattan, is actually the first movie directed solely by Frank Oz, which I thought was kind of cool.
I think he, did Jim Henson direct Labyrinth?
I believe he did, yes.
Okay.
Let me look that up. But what did you, in the meantime, what did you think about The Muppets Take Manhattan?
I thought it was along the same lines as the other Muppet movies. A lot of songs. I saw you talking about it earlier. Oh, it was directed by Jim Henson, Labyrinth.
Yes, I saw that as well.
So you were saying that it was depressing, and it was a little depressing,
mm-hmm.
where they all kind of split up at one point. But again, you know, if you've seen a Muppet movie, you've seen them all. You know, there's not going to be like a split or anything among the Muppet crew. They're just going to have to achieve. Although the scariest part, and I remember because I've seen this one too, I think, as a kid, because I remember exactly as it was going to happen. Spoiler alert, Kermit gets hit by a car.
Yes.
Which is pretty traumatizing for a young child of, let's say, I don't know, 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, Kermit the Frog gets hit by a car and is laying lifeless in the road. And you're
right.
Just kind of like, oh, wow. But the thing I wanted to say right up front about this movie was, it may not have been as comedic as the other ones,
mm-hmm.
but it just kind of maybe adds evidence to the fact that maybe the Muppets, you know, maybe they're kind of like us, where they have drama and they're sad sometimes, and they get fed up with their friends and they get mad when life gets them down and stuff like this. So I think Jim Henson, or however he was involved in this, did a pretty good job of humanizing as best he could the Muppet crew, at least Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, I see that point, and I think that's why, in my eyes, this movie is not nearly as enjoyable as the other two, is because he does that exact thing. He does kind of humanize them and gives them more of a kind of realistic personalities, and that's not what I want to see from my Muppet movies. You know, the Muppets as characters are defined by their ridiculousness and their kind of zest for life and their each individual, you know, kind of crazy personas and everything. And when you strip a lot of that out and make everything super serious and about finding work and jobs and, like, you know, stuff that people, like, real life people have to deal with all the time.
Yeah.
Why would we want to see these characters who are supposed to be, you know, kind of constantly happy in this kind of way for us to escape the real life problems that we as real people in the audience have to deal with? Why would we want to go to a movie and see these Muppet characters taking on these same issues? I don't know. I didn't find the movie funny almost at all. There's a few sequences, yes, of course, but
They're just like us, man. They're just like us.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Just trying to get through life.
And I think you're right with that. I think that's what they were trying to go for. I mean, that's what I got from it anyway. I don't really like what they were trying to do with this one. So
I respect your opinion, Ben, because I feel like that in a lot of other instances as well. When I go to see the movies, I don't want to, oh, look, somebody got raped and killed and all their stuff was stolen and, you know,
yeah,
all these real life things. I don't pay money to see real life when I can turn on the news and see it. You know, I want to see something that takes me away from real life.
Yeah.
So I understand your point of view, but I kind of see the side of what they were trying to do in the movie as well.
Yeah, and I think and you've made that known, you know, countless times to me personally, and also probably on this podcast a bunch of times too, where you've said that,
yeah,
that exact thing. And I think for the most part, you know, especially in Hollywood these days with this trend of going dark and gritty and all this stuff, you know, like all these movies, like,
kind of
taking on a little bit more of a depressing tone. And like you said, you can't just turn on the news and see a lot of the stuff that they're talking about if you're looking for something awful like Sucker Punch, where a character is getting, you know, potentially sexually abused and has to create a fake reality.
Spoiler
for herself
alert.
And stuff like that. Well, that's the premise of the movie. So,
gotcha.
Spoiler alert for the premise. But, but
I haven't seen the trailer yet. Damn it.
But I think for the Muppets, like, that's that's a safe zone to me, you know, like that's a part where you should never have to really deal with this kind of dour mood that a lot of this movie takes on, because it's the Muppets. It's supposed to be song and dance and these big numbers and everybody, you know, making slapstick jokes and one-liners and really clever dialogue back and forth and like this really kind of uniting sense of friendship and stuff. And a little bit of that comes through at the very end, especially with Kermit and Piggy's wedding at the end. You know, there's that kind of sense of unity there and everything.
That was awesome.
But throughout the majority of this movie, I was just kind of like, man, this is not what I signed up for, you know? A majority of this movie takes place in Pete's Diner, which is a restaurant, which is like just this seemingly random thing that they decided to do where the character's in New York, let's just have them work at a diner and talk to the owner, who is a guy who speaks in like random kind of really mystical language and stuff that nobody really understands exactly what he's saying, and then have the daughter be, you know, kind of what Miss Piggy
fashion
perceives
designer.
To be, yeah, a fashion designer, or what Miss Piggy perceives to be a romantic rival, even though she's not really. And it's like, okay, I must not just know who this actress is. And when I looked her up, the actress who plays Jenny, her name is Juliana Donald. And I looked her up, and on Wikipedia it says she's best known for playing the part of Jenny in The Muppets Take Manhattan. It's like,
oh, wow.
I don't understand why they chose her. If it was like a, today, if it was like George Clooney playing the father who runs the thing, and then if they had like, I don't know, Vanessa Hudgens or what, I'm just picking out random people
here,
you know, playing the part of Jenny, then, oh, I could see why that's relevant, because she's like a popular figure at the time. But I just assume that's what was going on in the Muppets Take Manhattan.
I think she was the first grade teacher in Billy Madison. I'm not sure.
What? Really?
Possibly. The one that rubs glue on her face?
I don't think so. I'm looking at her filmography right now, and I don't see Billy Madison in there anywhere.
1996?
She was in an episode of the John Larroquette Show, which I know.
Oh, snap! That guy's the man. Why isn't he on the podcast?
I don't know. She was also in an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. So
boom. Popularity. I can't imagine why she's not more popular.
Right. Yeah. But
on
a failed
comedian show and Walker, Texas Ranger.
Well, you know, they've got like the Muppets Take Manhattan does the same thing that the other two Muppets films do, where they bring in these really famous people. You know, Gregory Hines is like the roller skater. Dabney Coleman plays a producer in the very beginning. John Landis, the director of, like, I think he did An American Werewolf in Paris and some other things. He did, like, the Thriller video with Michael Jackson, I'm pretty sure. Pretty famous cool. director. He was, like, Lenny, the agent where Kermit, like, dresses up as part one of his plan and just, like, flies in this whirlwind. He's like, Lenny, baby, what's going on? Yeah, yeah, and tries to, like, pass off the script of Manhattan Melodies to him. So he was, you know, they bring these big name celebrities in, and then they have this girl Juliana Donald playing Jenny, who it's like, this girl has no real relevancy in pop culture. I don't understand why they devoted so much of the movie to that relationship between her and Kermit. What did you think about that?
What did I think about what?
Potential.
Sorry, I zoned out for a second.
Potential reasons for them actually. Including picking like a relatively unknown actress at the time, or what did you think about just her character in general and how that whole part of the story played out?
Yeah, she might have been somebody like she. I don't know. She might have been one of the producers' family or friends, or maybe she was peaking in popularity a little bit at the time, so they put her in the movie and it just didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought she was she kind of had some. There was a lot of stale acting in this one.
Yeah.
So she didn't really improve that at all.
No.
But you know, she was nice, I guess, as far as her character.
Sure.
What was the other question?
That was it. That was fine. That was okay. Basically it. Yeah. I was just kind of befuddled as to why that character played so much of a big role in this movie when...
Yeah, just casting an unknown.
Yeah, I guess that's
maybe
true. So...
It was her Superman.
So what did you think of this movie as a whole? Did you think it worked as well as the other two, like story-wise?
I think it did, yeah. I liked this one. I mean, it was slightly depressing, yes, and it was kind of real-life scenarios. But, you know, the comedy was there still. It was a little – you had to look hard to find it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a couple good laughs in this one. And, you know, it was – you know, they set out to go start this show and, you know, Kermit gets swindled at the beginning and, you know, all these kind of real life situations where, you know, they just don't automatically get a show right because they walked into New York City. You know, they had to work at it.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the guys gave up and they went and got their own jobs and then, you know, they worked hard and, you know, it's all about working hard and achieving things and stuff like that. But again, you know, it's the Muppets. So you're expecting a certain... I don't know, comedic goof-off element, but as far as, like, you know, a normal film with starring the Muppets, I think it did its job.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, you have to look hard for the comedy, but that's about it.
Right, yeah. I mean, and there are some moments, like the rats in the diner, you know, like baiting and coffee and stuff. There are some visual gags in there, but it's just not, like, the one-liners and stuff weren't nearly as... prominent in this movie as the other ones were. So I didn't enjoy myself nearly as much in this one, but I don't know if the listeners, if you guys have seen this movie or all of these films and you like The Muppets Take Manhattan for any particular reason, send us an email. Let us know what you think. Notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Let us know. I mean, that's what we're here for. So
I watched this one first. I watched Muppets Take Manhattan and then The Muppet Movie and then The Great Muppet Caper.
Okay. Yeah. I watched The Muppet Movie, and then The Muppets Take Manhattan, and then The Great Muppet Caper. So we both watched them out of chronological order, but I don't think that did anything as far as the you know, the perceived timeline to
for anything. I've also seen Muppets from Space, which is not nearly as good
as any of these.
The three, yeah.
Okay.
I've seen The Muppet Christmas Carol, which borders on my favorite Muppet movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen Muppet or Wizard of Oz, but there was a preview for it on the Great Muppet Caper DVD, and it looks terrible.
Oof.
You should probably check that out just to see how terrible it looks. And let's see, what was the other one that they came out with? Oh, Muppet Treasure Island I've never seen, actually. Oh,
okay. I heard that one's pretty – I remember seeing that a long time ago.
And then, of course, the new Jason Segel film, which is coming out, which I really hope – it's not as goofy as Muppet Wizard of Oz or anything like that.
And I think this one is going to be it's actually just called The Muppets, the one that you're referencing, and it's written and
I thought it was called The Greatest Muppet Movie Ever.
It was going to be, and then they shortened it to The Muppets. It was also going to be called I think it was going to be called The Greatest Muppet Movie of All Time, and before that it was called The Cheapest Muppet Movie Ever Made.
Oh, that sounds better.
but now it's just been shortened to Disney's The Muppets, I think. So
okay. You want to know who the scariest Muppet ever is?
Sure.
I'm gonna send you a picture of him right now.
You're sending me a picture. The audience is not going to be able to see this. You're aware of this, right?
No, I wasn't gonna share that at all.
Oh, what are you? What?
Let me see.
While you're looking for that, I'll just tell people a little bit about this upcoming Muppet movie. It was written by Jason Segel, who stars as Marshall in How I Met Your Mother, if you guys are familiar with that show. He was also in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, strangely enough. Just made that connection for the first time. And in Forgetting Sarah Marshall...
Just that connection?
Yeah, I've just made the connection that he plays a character named Marshall and starred in a movie called Forgetting Sarah Marshall. You know, Marshall being the connected.
No, I got it. No, right. Long time ago.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so Jason Segel, if you guys have seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he wrote that film also, and he wrote himself as the star and performs this kind of Muppet-esque vampire story, this Dracula tale at the very, very end of the movie. And which is not really that big of a spoiler, but I guess it's a kind of spoiler. So sorry, retroactive spoiler alert for Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And, you know, he's right as well, because that movie did very well. People thought that it was great, and it's clear that he has a real passion for the Muppet community and all that kind of stuff, and he's really into all that. So he's been kind of lobbying ever since Forgetting Sarah Marshall came out to write and be a part of a new Muppet movie, and he finally got his wish. So this Christmas, actually, I think it's coming out in November of this year, of 2011. This new movie is coming out. It's supposed to have like huge cameos from a bunch of big name Hollywood people. Now, I'm not going to read them, just in case you guys are interested in kind of preserving your viewing experience for spoilers for cameos and stuff. But it's supposed to star Jason Segel, Amy Adams, and Rashida Jones, I think, off the top of my head. Those are the ones that I can remember. So, yeah, Tyler, what were you looking for something? Did you find what you were looking for?
I have to go to Muppetpedia, I think.
What do you?
I'm not really sure that this place exists.
What are you trying to get at? I don't know.
His name is Digit. He is a Muppet that is really freaky looking, and he haunted my dreams.
Okay.
And I'm trying to show you what he looks like.
I'm gonna Google that right now.
No, I'm finding it right. Yep, here he is, Muppet Wiki.
Muppet Digit. Oh wow, that is horrifying.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a semi-robotic person. Jeez.
Yeah, I think he's like he's kind of like Data from Star Trek, except he haunts children's dreams.
Yeah, that is...
And he has human hands, and for a long time I thought he was a human.
That is frightening, yeah.
I can even look at him.
I'll try to
put that picture in the post.
Yeah, I'll embed the picture.
Of the horrific thing they're about to look at.
Right. Okay, so before we wrap this up, one other thing that I wanted to mention about The Muppets Take Manhattan is this really strange flashback sequence, and where Miss Piggy is talking to Kermit about what their lives would have been like had they interacted with each other as babies. And it goes into this long song and dance number and it's basically a live-action version of Muppet Babies, the animated TV show.
Yeah, that was their first appearance.
Yeah, which was kind of crazy because that show came out. I was looking this up. I was like, was that show out on the air when The Muppets Take Manhattan came out? And it actually was not. The Muppets Take Manhattan came out, I want to say, in July. And then Muppet Babies, the television show, the animated show, aired in September of 1984. So yeah. It was a few months afterwards. But I thought that was kind of a weird crossover that I can't really remember. Another example of seeing something like that before, like it's so quickly, you know, between one incarnation and the next.
It's funny. Robot Chicken did a little thing where in the Muppet Babies there was Skeeter and then his twin sister Scooter,
mm-hmm.
I think,
or the other way around because Scooter was the guy.
Oh, okay, yeah. Scooter was the guy, and then he had a twin sister named Skeeter on Muppet Babies. But if you watch the Skeeter is nowhere to be found, so Robot Chicken did this thing where, like, they've been holding the secret where they murdered Skeeter and, like, buried her in the backyard as Muppet Babies, and, like, they've been holding the secret for, like, years and years, and it's really funny.
That's awesome. Since you bring up Muppet-related jokes and things of that sort, have you seen, I'm sure you have, the Muppet, the Christian Bale Kermit side-by-side pictures? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've seen a couple of those. I don't know why those are around.
It's kind of hilarious.
Is he using Kermit at some point?
I don't know. It's just like there's a couple websites, I think, that have, or maybe one in particular, that is kind of devoted itself to putting side-by-side pictures of Christian Bale and Kermit the Frog in the exact same poses. And it's really strange because there's like, I want to say, close to 50 of these images where they're doing the exact same thing. And I'm going to link to it in the show notes or whatever, because it's pretty freaking entertaining. They're like on the phone. There's like close-ups of their eyes. They're playing
musical
instruments.
That.
They're like modeling, and one of them's in like a leather jacket, and they're in the exact same hand pose and stuff. Just really, really weird stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll link to that in the show notes. But anyway, unless you had anything else, why don't we just kind of go through some concluding thoughts of all three of these films. What did you think about this experience of watching all three of these Muppet movies?
Watch them all. They're good.
That's it? Really?
That's it. Yep. Okay. All right. I can critique the Muppet movies.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah, anymore. I would say skip the Muppets Take Manhattan, but the other ones are worth seeing, in my opinion.
No, you got to see all the Henson movies at least, or else you're not going to gain enlightenment.
Ooh, right.
Yeah. You got to go three Muppet movies, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, possibly The Storyteller.
Yep.
I don't know.
That's one you've been.
Storyteller, Greek Myths.
Nice. Okay, cool. Well, let's. Why don't you go ahead and bust out the Apple II and
see what. Oh, Ben, I got a big surprise for you.
Yes.
I've actually, over the last 3 weeks, I've actually upgraded the Apple II.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, some may call it the Apple III, but I'm still going to call it the Apple II. But it has this new little, I guess I'll call it a gadget.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an app, if you will, for those people that are a little more technologically advanced than the next podcast. It's going to give us a movie for next week, which we're going to watch and discuss. And then it's going to give us three movies for the listeners to choose from that we'll watch in 2 weeks. How's that sound?
Okay. Yeah, cool. So yeah. The listeners can just email us with their decision.
They can
email us.
They can Facebook us. They can tweet us. The term is used. They can phone us.
Yeah, leave them voicemail. Yeah.
Or they can send carrier pigeons.
Okay, interesting. All right, so any means of communication necessary.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right, so let's pull that. I guess we got two levers now, so let's pull both of them.
All right.
All right, so next week we're going to be watching Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis.
Excellent.
Or show tunes for you.
All right.
And then the three movies to choose from for 2 weeks from now, for the listeners to email us or, you know, Pony Express us.
Mm-hmm.
The three movies up for grabs are Cool World with Brad Pitt,
mm-hmm.
Hawk : The Slayer with Jack Palance.
Okay.
I'm already seeing that one in my mailbox. And Zardoz with Sean Connery. Sean Connery possibly making a return to the Not Just New Movies podcast because he had appeared very briefly in episode 2, Outland.
And also, I'm looking at this right now, Zardoz was directed by John Borman, who directed Excalibur, which I think is what we talked about on like the fourth episode of the show. So yeah.
It's totally Muppet. I mean, meta. I mean, damn.
All right, so I, you know what? I've got the plot summaries for these three movies, so I'm just going to read them really quickly, or a little selection here, so people might be able to vote a little bit more informed. So here we go. The synopsis for Hawk : The Slayer is, when his evil older brother, Voltan, kills their father and kidnaps a nun, it's up to valiant warrior Hawk to stop him. Aided by an elf, a giant, and a dwarf, Hawk sets out on a quest to find a magical sword before Voltan gets a hold of it. All right, I'm not going to read any of the rest of it. You kind of get the picture from that. The one for Cool World is... Ralph Bakshi directed this dizzying mix of animated whimsy and live-action frenzy about two worlds colliding. Detective Frank Harris, played by Brad Pitt, works hard to ensure that humans and animated characters don't bed each other. If they do, the wall between the two realms collapses. So that's all that one.
Sweet.
And then Zardoz, movie came out in 1974. In this cult favorite from John Borman, 23rd century society is split into two castes, the overly civilized Eternals and the barely civilized Brutals, one of which is constantly controlling the other. The Brutals worship a huge stone figure known as Zardoz. When Zed, Sean Connery, begins to question the authenticity of this god, the film is able to offer some pointed commentary on class structure and religion. So email us or communicate with us in some way and let us know which of those three you would prefer listening to.
Just pass a note during class.
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. Well, let's go ahead and move into the kind of listener feedback section. This is part where we...
You would not believe the postcards we got this week.
Yeah, well, we've got a couple of Twitter followers. You guys can follow us on Facebook. Just go, or not follow us on Facebook. I'm sorry. Check us out.
Do that too.
You can just search the Not Just the Movies podcast. You can like us or whatever on there. And then you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. We do have a few new Twitter followers. So at Daniel Seraph, at Kendra Swapshire. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing any of these.
Swap your Shire.
At SMA underscore AKER, so SMAACKER. At Dolly BNF STANGE, so Dolly Biffenstange, I'm going to say. So thanks for that. And we also have a direct message from Bill Goldberg, the wrestler.
What?
I'm going to read this really quickly.
You're next.
For info, contact at Uncle Louie or email PR for Goldberg at spcglobal.net. For exclusive merch, visit this website. Follow at Goldberg Garage. Who's next? Ooh. Okay, all right. Thanks, Goldberg, for that.
Thanks, Bill.
Big fan of your work in the Christmas classic Santa Slay. Which
don't forget, I think, was he in Universal Soldier 2? Or was that Stone Cold?
You know, I think that was Stone Cold, but maybe it was both of them.
I'm pretty sure Goldberg was in one of those.
Okay, all right.
Was he in the front now? Yeah.
I don't remember. Those movies all blend together for me. But all right, so let's read a couple of emails we have here. You guys can always feel free to email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. So here we go. This one says, Kermit the Frog here. Really like the podcast, guys, and I think your choice of the Muppet movie is a great choice to open your horizons. My best advice for you is to take this gig on the road. Do a live movie review. Of course, that might be difficult if nobody's seen the movie. Maybe a two-man band called Frocks, a.k.a. Frog's Capacitor. Anybody get that? Nobody?
That's clever.
Back to the drawing board, then. Sincere regards, Kermit the Frog. P.S. The Fly was probably my favorite podcast, though not very appetizing, if you ask me. Thank you, Kermit. Appreciate that.
Kermit. Thanks, buddy.
Greetings from Kilimanjaro, this one says. Marks,
wow.
Marks and felicitations, fellas. Always good to hear two educated guys talk movies. Gotta hand it to you. You really got my attention with that David Bowie flick. I was supposed to play the part of Sir Didymus, but a previous engagement with Robert Goulet and Phil Harris came up. Don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but this podcast needs the opinion of our most educated and foul brethren, the Chicken. Camilla's sister Vanilla is always looking to review her favorite movie, Predator 2. Strange, I know. Izzo says hello, Gonzo the Great. So thank you, Gonzo.
What is Gonzo doing at Kilimanjaro?
I don't know.
He's crazy.
So, greetings from Minneapolis. This one. Hey, Not Just New Movies. For a town that starts its name with Minnie, it sure has a lot of square footage. Waka waka. Just thought I'd drop a line, but then the line ran off with my wallet. So I may need some bus fare to get back home. Some fare for a bear fare. The words fare are spelled differently. It's F-A-I-R-F-A-R-E.
Oh, I get it.
B-A-R-E-B-E-A-R. Ha cha 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 cha. Honey pot for your thoughts, Fozzie Bear. Thank you, Fozzie. That was awesome. Au revoir from Holland. What's good, cats? Me and the Animal Man are out here in the Netherlands, soaking in the best of these coffee shops. But man, I don't know what it is about this place, but Animal is looking more and more like a wily head of cabbage set on fire. Freaking me out, man. Other than that, good Java and great food, but I forgot my dental floss. Keep it chilling. Dr. Teeth in the Electric Mayhem. P.S. Not to be confused with Mr. T or the other Mr. T who's known for his tall teeth. I don't get that, but thank you. Okay, wow. This one says, Her Num for the subject line. It says, Sure Vidna New Haven Kunertiket Herda Ferdna Sheenda Do Der Perdcast Ifen Ner Herda Turna Birdie Ernum Really Really Schmuda. And it says untranslatable in parentheses. And then it says, Frinda Mernin Herr, the Swedish Chef, a.k.a. the Swedish Chef. So thank you for that. That's awesome. And then this one just says Glass.
Try to read it as like the Swedish accent. I really thought when I read the email that was sent to us by the Swedish Chef, I thought you'd read it That's okay.
And then this last one that we have, the subject line is glass blowing in Mount Vernon, and it just says, God bless America and God bless this podcast, Sam the Eagle.
Oh, so, that's nice.
Classy, Sam. Thank you very much for that. All right. Yeah. That was awesome. Thanks for all of the emails, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
You guys really kicked it up a notch in our break time. So if you guys want, keep those emails coming. That would be awesome. In the meantime, let's finish up our character name game for this week. So, Tyler, you seemed pretty confident at the very beginning that you knew what this one was. And
yeah.
We'll give it to you one more time. The character's name is Diego de la Vega.
Diego de la Vega. Is this a bird? Because I'm pretty sure I'm thinking of a bird.
This is not a bird.
Okay, all right. Is it Vin Diesel's character in Triple X?
It is not. That would be Xander Cage.
I'm Xander Cage. Is it a Vin Diesel film?
It is not. It doesn't have anything to do with Vin Diesel, actually.
Shoot.
Diego de la Vega.
I thought I knew
this one.
I thought so, too. But I thought I had enough time to think about it. I don't know why I was thinking it was a bird. Diego.
I'll give you a hint. It's okay. Not a bird, but it is Spanish for the fox.
Oh. Diego de la Vega. Diego de la Vega. Antonio Banderas. Is he involved in any way?
It's very close. He is involved in some way, but it's not Antonio Banderas' character in the movie that you're
thinking Johnny
of.
Depp's character in Once Upon a Time in Mexico?
It is not, but you're getting colder now. You were closer with Antonio Banderas.
Oh. Shoot. Why did I think I knew this?
Diego de la Vega. You do know this, I'm telling you. It's just one of those names that's kind of buried in your subconscious.
Is it the movie with the zombies?
No.
It's
an Antonio Banderas movie.
Okay, all right.
Zorro? It is The Mask of Zorro, yes. So now it's just which actor in that movie played the character of Diego de la Vega.
All I had to do was name the film. But I'll guess, is it Anthony Hopkins' character?
It is Anthony Hopkins, yes.
He plays Odin in Thor.
Yes, that's exactly right, and that is the connection. And yes, for Tyler, for how many times we've been playing this game, you don't have to list the name of the movie. It's the character's name. It's the actor who plays that character, is it not?
No, it's definitely movie.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
You have to guess the name of the movie that the character's from. You said it, I believe, at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, you're right. All right. Yeah. Now I'm the one who feels like an ass. So, all right. You know what? I would cut that out because I feel like an idiot, but I'm going to keep that in there and just let everybody know that I...
Just for posterity.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
No sense of time.
And I apologize for talking down to you just then. So I clearly have no idea what I'm talking about. But as you mentioned, Odin... The Anthony Hopkins is the actor who plays Odin in Thor, which is the new Marvel film that just came out this past week.
You can find a review of it, notjustnewmovies.com.
You can find a review at notjustnewmovies.com. So speaking of where you can find things that we've written on the internet, Tyler, let's go back to you. Where can people track down your stuff?
Solar Sentinel Dust Again every week.
That would be the Solar Sentinel
.blogspot.com
on both of those.
Yeah.
And cool stuff. All right. Well, you guys can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. What's that?
Like the fruit.
Right. Yes. Like the fruit. Precisely. You guys can find me writing occasionally at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. You can also hear me on the Geek Tyrant weekly podcast, which we've also taken a few weeks off, but we should be back in full swing this week over there as well. So music for this show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. And again, next week we will be watching Hudson Hawk starring Bruce Willis, which is available on Netflix. Watch instantly. So let us know what you think of that movie or any others that we've discussed on this podcast by giving us a call at 904-469-6566 or emailing us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a happy Mother's Day, and we will see you guys next week.
Why are there so many
songs about rainbows and what's on the other side. Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and